You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
7:06 this morning. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Jamie Martinson. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Attorney General Josh Call joins us in about 20 minutes to talk about we just heard about a new lawsuit Wisconsin has entered into with 19 other states and a little victory yesterday. So we'll talk to the Attorney General about that coming up. The Boy Aquarium bumping us back with a little
Love
Neil
that.
Young and Heart of Gold because Neil Young is joining the fray. Longtime activist, mm-hmm. I think it's safe to say, Neil Young, joining the argument and the fight for Greenland by taking on Amazon and the Trump administration. This is and feeding his fans music for free.
I think it's interesting because he donated a full year's access to his entire music and documentary archives to the people of Greenland, calling it an offer of peace and love. And obviously, this donation comes in the middle of these international tensions over Greenland after the Trump administration backtracked on previous claims of ownership and threats of tariffs. And that seems like I texted our group yesterday. I'm like, hey, do you guys remember a week ago when we were talking about world takeover and Greenland and tariffs in a 50-second state? And here we are.
Memories.
That memories.
Was only last week?
It was only last week. He was at
Davos.
Davos
was a week.
He was
like
at Davos last week. That's how fast this timeline moves. Keep up, people. You'll miss a lot. I don't know what to tell you.
Hold on. So wait, have we taken over already? Have we moved on? Greenland is ours or no?
I don't know. Stephen Miller came out of the shadows and he started writing things. And I don't know what happened. But yes, Davos was only a week ago.
Here's the problem. It hasn't been sunny. So Stephen Miller's been able to get out.
This is true.
He hasn't had to stay in the darkness, which is troublesome.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he melts like the Wicked Witch of the West in Wizard of Oz if he sees too much light or water or something. But Neil Young is saying that he hopes his music will help ease the unwarranted stress caused by the U.S. government's actions. Now, this isn't actually the first time, if you followed any part of Neil Young's career, that he's taken some sort of stand. He actually pulled his music from Amazon over CEO Jeff Bezos' support of President Trump. And he also left Spotify over COVID misinformation on Joe Rogan's podcast, which, by the way, he did that for a short amount of time. Then his music went back up on Spotify.
Well, yeah,
of course.
Well, it's not just, I mean, Neil Young is not just a guy.
Right.
If Neil Young pulls his music off and sales and downloads and everything else stops, there's a lot of other people that are getting affected, and probably some of those don't have the bank account that Neil Young has, and they're like, hey, Neil, I get it. We commend your stand, but my kids, they need some shoes. So if maybe we could chill out on the – I mean, if you want to make donations and be an activist, that's cool. But, we were just going to go to the Dells for the weekend, so I need my income to keep coming in.
You're going to have to postpone that trip. I don't know if you know this. Plane tickets, non-refundable kind of thing. As you mentioned this, Young acknowledges that by removing his music from Amazon, it's probably going to hurt his record company in the short term. He acknowledges this, but he believes...
But I don't care.
I don't care. I have the money. But he believes the message matters more, and while he's speaking out on international issues, he's also been very vocal about a lot of the domestic concerns here in the United States, criticizing ICE and the Trump administration for policies he says that are destabilizing our communities. Now, for Greenland, this particular gift means free access of decades of music and films, renewable for as long as residents live there. Yeah, it's a bit of a mix of culture, conscience, and, an outspokenness that only Neil Young has been able to bring over the years, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to poo-poo Neil Young.
Sure,
like,
Neil Young.
But it's like, okay, great. I wonder how many people in Greenland are, excited by this news. You don't know. Maybe all of them. No. Maybe all 12 of the people at Greenland are ready to go.
Here's where my mind goes. I think 56,000 we learned just last week in Davos, by the way. But
Jamie, that is so far in the past. I don't even know where Greenland is anymore. I have no idea.
It's Iceland. Right?
See,
remember?
All right, hold on.
We learned last week. I remember these things in my head. But here's the thing that I go back to, too. Just like when Neil Young pulled everything from Spotify, how much is this actually hurting Amazon? I mean, Jeff Bezos alone in 2023 made $70 billion, which translated to roughly $8 million per hour as far as salary. So this isn't going to hurt Amazon. And I get Neil Young is trying to make his stand, but
that's absolutely true. But you have to say, all right, how much does me standing on a street protesting hurt anybody? It doesn't. But you have to. So I got to give it to Neil Young in that way. It's his statement. And we can laugh at it if we want and go, oh, how many people are, you know, clamoring for Neil Young's 62-year career stuff. But it's his way of actually doing something and saying something. And so good for him.
Yeah.
And even if just a few people up there go, oh, I have access to all this. He made somebody happy. And I'm never going to be mad at somebody trying to make somebody happy.
No, absolutely. Especially right now, right? Like, we just forgot that Davos was only a week ago and Greenland was a conversation 1 week ago because that's...
Honestly, I wasn't saying that as a joke. Oh, my God, really?
Yeah.
That's all...
It's just a week
every
ago.
Every day there's new stuff and we're like, okay. And I'm sure we're not the only ones who feel that way. If you think things are going too fast or if there's anything you want to jump in about, 855-75-CIVIC, that number may be gone next week. Who knows? We've got, and then you need a new number, but right now it's 855-752-4842. Dick is in Madison.
Yeah.
He's got something to say. Hey, Dick, welcome to the show.
Well, first of all, get it right. It's Iceland, not Greenland.
I'm jotting.
Okay. It's hard to keep up, Dick. Things are moving rapidly.
But, yeah. We've moved on to Iran this week, and I came up with a name for him yesterday, the president. I'm calling him President Crisis Management. He creates crisis and then tries to manage it. That's all he does. Constantly.
That's true. We said that a week ago for Davos. I think we said that then. But yeah.
You look at his first term, it was a disaster. How did he manage COVID, for instance? That was really well done, huh?
Bleach and sunlight, Dick. I don't know what you're talking about.
Correct.
Bleach and sunlight, buddy.
We appreciate the call
Thanks
this morning.
Calling.
I mean, Dick's not wrong. We do move very quickly right now, and this administration creates a lot of their own issues. I mean, we just talked about that this morning in light of Minneapolis, too. Apparently, the verbiage came out to DHS of what they were supposed to say. Kristi Noem went to a podium. She said the things. They did not go over well, those things. And now there's backlash from their own party. So now Stephen Miller has to put out a late night press release or statement, I should say, basically saying, well, they were trained well, and we're going to look into these things because it might not have actually been what we said it was because the training might not be what it is. Like, don't give me the words. Just tell me that, you know, you went out there and you wanted it to look like one thing, and it really wasn't, and then the backlash got too bad. So now we're going to – you came out of the shadows to issue this statement. That's what it is, right?
It's all – yeah. It's just one thing after another, and – Jamie, I'm going to go back 3 weeks if I can, or maybe a month.
God, I don't even know if I can remember that far back. I'll try.
Weren't there supposed to be a big release of the Epstein files?
Sure.
Wasn't that supposed to come? But I know everything else is like, hey, wait a minute. Wait, we were supposed to see some paperwork.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that time has passed.
We're so far past all that. Now, I don't know if this will surprise you, but probably not. I did a little digging last night to see if there were any other artists who had ever done anything like what Neil Young did. I was curious. Yes. Like, has anybody ever done this, right? Now, full digital archives gifted to a specific population, that's pretty unique. And musicians usually leverage their intellectual property for humanitarian, environmental, or political causes. But to give it to a whole, you know, continent, essentially, that's a little different. Or whole land mass.
What about U2 giving us their entire album? Everybody.
Right, exactly. That is on the list somewhere on here. I've got a lot of them, but I won't read them all. But there was a few on here, like Sounds Right Initiative from 2024. This was a Brian Eno credited nature as a songwriter, royalties, and the royalties that fund the biodiversity conservation. In 1979, we had music for UNICEF, the Bee Gees, Abbott. Donna Summer donated all the royalties to UNICEF. And then with the political and cultural solidarity, you have the concert for Bangladesh in 1971. George Harrison raised funds for refugees through this large-scale benefit concert. Anti-apartheid movements in 1985. Bruce Springsteen and Bono, used music like Sun City to oppose the South African government. Bob Dylan in the 1960s and Joan Baez supported the American Civil Rights Movement through a performance and activism. It was called Freedom Songs. Pearl Jam even got in on the act for environmental and political purposes, and Green Day in the 2000s did as well. So, you know, there's other artists who have gone this route. But
listen, don't bring up Green Day. They're keeping our dear leader from going to the Super Bowl. Them and Bad Bunny.
Can I ask a question? Question? Do you honestly?
I hope you do.
Do you honestly think that the president is not going to the Super Bowl because of artists like Bad Bunny and Green Day and Brandi Carlile, or do you honestly think he's afraid he's going to be shown on a Jumbotron and booed?
He was booed roundly at his last sporting event. Of course, that's why he's not going. He's not the kind of guy who is willing to take the slings and arrows just because that's what every other president has done. Every president goes to the Super Bowl.
Sure.
He made his, remember last time he was in, and he went to the Super Bowl last year with the Jets and the flyover and the whole thing. He wouldn't get that warmer reception in San Francisco, I don't believe.
I don't think
And for him to say, first he's anti them. So he's anti-Green Day and Bad Bunny because, you know, they don't like him. And he doesn't like people who don't like him. So that's it. But then he said it's such a long flight.
It is a long flight. It's hard when you come from Florida. It's
but
hard.
Is it hard on a plane that has bedrooms and an office and a kitchen and basically it's a flying apartment? Does it make it hard there?
I think most of us dream of having that moment in time. Don, listening on WMDX, texting in from Madison this morning, saying that maybe what Neil Young will inspire other performers and performing artists to do the same. Maybe it will inspire consumers to start boycotting Amazon. Individuals make a difference. Thank you for the thoughts this morning. And if you want to give us your thoughts, we'd love to hear from you. 1-855-752-4842. That number is also 1-855-75-CIVIC.
The Boy Aquarium posing an interesting thought. How much taxpayer money is being saved because the president is not flying to the Super Bowl?
Wow.
I'm thinking more like security-wise than
whole thing. From security, because that's all you need at the Super Bowl is more security.
Right.
That's probably one of the most secure places you could be on the 8th of February is in the Super Bowl. But they're saving on all of that. Well, every trip a president makes costs an exorbitant amount of money.
Right.
And that doesn't change from administration to administration. This administration takes a lot of trips.
They do.
Just back and forth to Florida. But,
well, it's important. You got to get your golf in. I get it. It's 7:19 right now. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call joins us after the break. So stick around on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
7:22 right now. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, Civic Media Mornings. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Wisconsin's Attorney General Josh Call and a multi-state coalition of governors and attorneys general have been filing lawsuits against the Trump administration over a number of different things. Yesterday, the coalition got a victory, which is always good to celebrate. They secured a win blocking the Trump administration's attempt to illegally withhold billions of dollars in congressionally approved funding for the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Formula Program. That's a mouthful. To help explain what that mouthful means, Wisconsin's Attorney General Josh Call joins us this morning. Mr. Attorney General, thank you for being here. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, good morning, and thanks for having me on the program.
So explain to us, first of all, congratulations on the win by the multi-state coalition. Can you explain what this lawsuit was about and what this victory means for people in Wisconsin and all the other states that are affected?
Yeah, you know, there was legislation passed by Congress and signed into law by the president at the time that provided for investments in a lot of clean energy technology. And one of the things that was provided for was electric vehicle infrastructure. That's a real win-win for Wisconsin because on the one hand, it helps promote clean air because as we're shifting to more electric vehicles, that's good for protecting clean air. But it also means jobs for folks in Wisconsin as those infrastructure, as that infrastructure is installed. What Donald Trump did is he came along and basically his administration said, we don't care what the law is, we're going to cancel these grants. We went to court, we challenged it, and we now have a ruling that was issued, I believe, last week from the court blocking the Trump administration's action. And what that does is it preserves tens of millions of dollars of investment in Wisconsin. So this win is good for Wisconsin jobs, and it's good for our environment.
And there's also a coalition of 35 state attorneys that you're leading. And we want to talk a little bit about this one as well, because we have a short amount of time. So we're going to try to fit as much as we can with you this morning. Since you're leading this one up, it's basically on AI. And this is to crack down a little bit on the AI chatbot. So explain this to us and how this is going to look.
Yeah, absolutely. So we joined this multi-state letter. We're actually not the lead on this one, but we have a bunch of states, a bipartisan group of AGs. You know how divided these times can be in a partisan fashion. We had a bipartisan group of AGs come together to call on XAI specifically, which makes Grok, which is one of these chatbots. We called on them to take action to prevent some of the really disturbing kinds of images that are being generated from continuing to be generated. There have been a lot of concerning reports about images where people are able to be what's called nudified, where basically an image is taken and AI will transform it. This is really, really offensive. It is an invasion of people's privacy. There's a lot of concern that this is happening not just with images of adults, but also with images of kids. We need to make sure that as we are developing these new technologies, that people's basic rights are protected. And so we are calling on Grok and XAI to take action to make sure that this isn't happening.
Attorney General for Wisconsin, Josh Call, is our guest. Let's take a step back for a minute, Mr. Attorney General. How do these multi-state coalitions come together? And how much more weight does that carry when a lawsuit is filed?
It happens in a variety of ways. We've had big bipartisan coalitions, as we just mentioned with this letter to XAI. We work together on consumer protection issues to combat the opioid epidemic. Sometimes, though, these tend to break along partisan lines, and that's happened often during the Trump administration. So my administration works closely with other AG's offices where we're regularly in contact. And by bringing these challenges collectively, what we can do is, first of all, be efficient and pool resources. We've got limited resources and we want to use them effectively. So by working together, we can reduce what it takes to put into any particular case. But it's also important to have these big coalitions because in a lot of these cases, and we just mentioned the vehicle infrastructure case, when there's an order issued, it often applies only in the states that have brought challenges. And so by being a part of these challenges, we are helping preserve over the course of the challenges against the Trump administration, hundreds of millions of dollars in funding that is coming to Wisconsin through victories we've had or through times when the administration has backed down. And so continuing to be parts of those challenges as they arise is going to be really important for the state.
Do these rulings then impact, because obviously the Trump administration won't be here forever. So do these rulings impact future administrations and some of the things that they then try to down the road implement? Are we looking that far ahead with some of these as well?
Potentially they could. I will say a lot of what's happening is because the Trump administration is so extreme and so sure. willing to flout the law that it's hard to imagine any future administration just openly defying the law in this way. But it's setting clear precedent that, you know, with some of these programs, for instance, the Trump administration can't just break the law, ignore the law, and cancel things unilaterally. It's got to follow the process that's in place for all lawmaking in the country.
Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call is with us. We only have about a minute left. Mr. Attorney General, are there in the foreseeable future more of these coalition lawsuits that you're predicting are going to be filed?
It's going to depend a lot on what the Trump administration does. If they continue to take actions that harm Wisconsinites and that violate the law, we are absolutely prepared to take action. Just recently we joined a multi-state brief in support of what Minnesota is arguing in their case challenging the actions of the Department of Homeland Security. Certainly it's possible if they try to have actions like that in other parts of the country that there would be multi-state briefs. But again, if the administration continues attacking people's rights, attacking the law or ignoring the law in a way that harms Wisconsinites, we're prepared to act.
Thank you so much. That is Attorney General for the state of Wisconsin, Josh Call. We appreciate your time so much this morning and making us a little smarter and also enlightening us a little bit. It is 7:20.
Keep up the good work.
It is 7:29 right now. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan, and we're going to talk a little bit about Wisconsin communities making secret deals over data centers. Say it isn't so. We'll talk about it on the Civic Media.
7:35 right now. Thank you for joining us this morning. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. If you're listening on in La Crosse, you're listening on WLCX, in Madison on WMDX, and in Wausau on WXCO. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Good morning. We've talked a lot about data centers. There's every town, it seems like, is having some referendums. They're having town meetings. Everybody's talking about data centers. Wisconsin, if you don't know, has about 40 data centers. They stretch all over the state. But here's an interesting question. How did a $1 billion, 520-acre data center proposed by one of the world's richest companies go completely unnoticed in Beaver Dam? I don't know. Thankfully, Tom Kircher does. He's a reporter for Wisconsin Watch, a nonprofit, nonpartisan newsroom. They always have great in-depth reporting, and they are reporting on this. Tom, thanks for being here. This story, as I read it, is amazing. First of all, how do you get tipped off that this is happening, that this giant development is coming, and nobody knows anything about it?
Yeah, actually this story idea came from one of our Wisconsin Watch readers. I got an email a couple of months ago from a person who suggested we take a look at some of these massive data center proposals. And over the course of a phone call and some emails, he sort of offhandedly mentioned non-disclosure agreements, NDAs, and that term caught my attention.
And so let's get into a little bit of the fact finding here, because this story is, I've read it a couple of different times because there are different elements to it and there are several pieces of it. So how did, as you started doing your fact finding, how did this $1 billion, 520-acre meta data center stay hidden in a town the size of Beaver Dam for over
a year? Yeah, that's right. It's because of the non-disclosure agreements that I mentioned. So in the case of Beaver Dam, a non-disclosure agreement was signed between the local government officials and the company that wanted to put the data center in Beaver Dam. And that effectively shut the public out of the process of consideration. So for more than a year, there were meetings with Beaver Dam staff and the what turned out to be Meta, the company that owns Facebook and Instagram. behind the scenes, if you will, planning preparation for a development that's, you know, worth $1 billion. Only after a year, once that agreement was signed, was there a public announcement to say, hey, Beaver Dam, we're considering a really big data center.
So when they sign these NDAs and they finally do let the public know a year later, is it a done deal already, or are they still having to go through all the usual processes to get the approval?
Yeah, good point. So it is a preparatory in nature, if you will. So it's typically at a city staff or village staff level that they're planning staff, for example, exchanging information, negotiating ideas to see how feasible a data center might be in a particular community. But going further than that, you know, actually making some specific proposals. And so it's not a done deal. You know, once it's revealed to the public, there still must be public votes taken by the city council or the village board. But so much of the preparatory work has already been done. The question becomes, when should the public be let in on the process?
Yeah. And was there anything that in the non-disclosure agreements that could have actually allowed the city or development officials to share with the public? Or was it just that buttoned up as you were doing your research?
Yeah, without being a lawyer, I'd want to be careful,
sure,
on that,
sure,
a little bit. But for the most part, right, it essentially binds the company that wants to build the data center and the local government, the city, the village, the town, from disclosing anything, even the fact that there's a discussion about a project. You know, these agreements will refer to a project. There's not even the mention of data center. And, you know, as I think a lot of people know, these are massive proposals.
Yeah.
So we looked at 7 big proposals in Wisconsin. You know, they range from $1 billion in Beaver Dam to up to $20 million in Mount Pleasant, you know, near Milwaukee. So these aren't just another business opening or even a shopping center. These are transforming type of projects that affect land use, power use, water use. And again, the question is, you know, when should the public be made aware that, hey, this massive proposal is being considered?
Tom Kircher is a reporter for Wisconsin Watch. He joins us to talk about these NDAs between municipalities and data center companies. There was a big, you know, was it a week ago, 2 weeks ago? Time is irrelevant anymore. When Microsoft said just what you were saying, that we need to be more transparent with the public. Were the seven municipalities and potential projects you mentioned the only NDAs that you found, or is this attempt to keep the public out of the discussion for as long as possible more widespread?
So in looking at these 7 big projects around the state, NDAs, the non-disclosure agreements, were used in 4 of them.
Okay.
But that's not to say that there isn't secrecy in other projects too. For example, in DeForest, you know, outside of Madison, in that case, the village of DeForest did not sign a non-disclosure agreement for the data center proposed there. But for months, there were staff level negotiations between the data center company and the village of DeForest, pre-development agreements being written up, that sort of thing. So that happened for months before there was ever a public announcement. So even when there's not an NDA in place, you know, there are still examples of the public not finding out about a project until well after it's been planned.
And when we talk about these NDAs, how are they being referenced? When we look at this, and when these city councils and these county councils are looking at some of these proposals, they have to be on some sort of agenda, right? Like these conversations have to keep coming up. So how are they being named so that people don't understand them and don't know what they are, I guess?
Right. You know, there are examples of that, Beaver Dam being one, where initially in the process, you might not see the name of a big company like Microsoft or Meta. There's an example of a small company called Balloonist LLC that was named in some of these. So you're right. There are some public disclosures to an extent, a mention of a company name, a reference to a project, but typically not a reference to a data center. And, you know, these things are affect so many parts of life, right? The land use, the hundreds of acres that might be involved, how much power is going to be used, how much water is going to be used. And so there's more and more blowback, if you will, from the public when they find out, oh my gosh, this data center could be coming to our community. Not to say whether the data centers are good or not. There's economic development arguments. There's worries about the environment. But again, the question of when should the public be brought in? And it did spark some legislation, actually just a few days before we published our story at Wisconsin Watch. A state lawmaker has proposed that non-disclosure agreements between a data center company and a local government be prohibited.
Well, that's progress. When you were investigating this story, did you hear anything from some of these municipalities? Did anybody from Beaver Dam comment to you and say, well, you know, this is just how things work, Tom? You don't understand.
Yeah, very good question. And in fact, when it comes to economic development, when a company wants to come to your town and you know, propose a business or some kind of development, often there are these non-disclosure agreements that are signed for a limited period of time. From that side of it, so to speak, from the business side, it's competitive, right? I don't want my competitors knowing where I might be locating, for example. So there's, again, understandable reasons on the business side to keep things confidential, at least for a point. But it's one thing when a company signs a non-disclosure agreement with a property owner. If I'm a company, Brian, and I want to buy your land, when we sign a deal to keep it quiet, that's between two private entities, right? But when it comes to the government, I mean, the government is supposed to be representing the public, right? Looking out for the public. So there's something inconsistent there when a local government says, we're going to keep this proposal under wraps for months or even longer before we let the public in on it.
We're talking with Tom Kircher. He is a reporter for Wisconsin Watch, a nonprofit, nonpartisan newsroom. I guess one of the questions as we're sitting here, and perhaps, you know, with the research and your fact-finding, you can't answer this, but how does this public opposition in places like Beaver Dam, even Port Washington, how are you seeing the decision-making at these hearings take place with some of this influence on the local level?
Yeah, I know in Port Washington, in the north of Milwaukee, there's been some controversy, certainly, even though that project has already been approved. So even at that stage, there's still public reaction to it. There's an effort to recall the mayor from office. Folks might recall back in December, there was a public meeting about the data center in Port Washington, and three members of the public were arrested as they were protesting. So even after things get approved, there's still a feeling on the part of some citizens that, hey, we weren't let in on this soon enough. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it is a tough call, to be fair. Mm-hmm. If I'm a data center company and I make a phone call to the city of Madison, say I'm interested in maybe putting a data center there, does that mean there should be this immediate public announcement, you know, with TV cameras?
That seems silly.
Yeah.
At the same time, if months and months and months go along and there's a lot of documents exchanged back and forth and planning, at some stage, the public would want to know, hey, there's this massive project, maybe good, maybe not, that's proposed for our community. We'd like to have input.
Tom, we got a text from Troy in Mount Horeb, and I think this is a good question, but I'm not a lawyer, and you said you're not a lawyer either. What about open records laws? Do those nullify an NDA? Would I still be able to find it? Or is it the fact that the NDA is so hidden, I wouldn't even know to ask for one?
So we did obtain these non-disclosure agreements from the local governments through public record requests. It is a bit of a search, right, to try to figure out, does one exist? If it's confidential, how do you know that it exists? You know, but it is possible to request specifically, is there an NDA signed between your local government and any data center company? And then it's possible to get at it that way.
All right. I mean, it is a really fascinating story, so we would encourage anybody to go check it out. We've been talking with Tom Kircher. He is a reporter for Wisconsin Watch, a nonprofit, nonpartisan newsroom. Tom, thank you so much for your time this morning. Thank you for this fantastic reporting. Where can people go check this article out and read for themselves all of this work that you've put into this?
Yeah, thanks. WisconsinWatch.org. And you're right, we're a nonprofit. Similar to, you know, maybe a traditional type newspaper, but we're not out there chasing the daily stories. We're trying to step back and do big picture looks at issues.
And it is always very in depth and very informative. And we always appreciate Wisconsin Watch people and reporters joining us. So thanks a lot, Tom.
Good to be with you. You're welcome.
Thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a little nerve wracking to see, but so many things are done in secret.
Yeah.
This shouldn't surprise us, but it does, and we're talking about this so much. Next, we got to talk about a classic sitcom and
no secret
beer.
This one.
No, we're gonna get to that. Everything's out in the open.
It's 7:48 right now. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
It's 7:52 right now. That is one of my all-time favorite TV theme songs. I absolutely love it. I'm so excited we're going to be talking Laverne and Shirley with this next guest. It is 7:52. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Yes, Laverne and Shirley turns 50 years old, turned 50 years old yesterday.
Yes.
You know, Penny Marshall, Cindy Williams, they played Milwaukee roommates who worked at the fictional Schatz Brewery. Show went on to be one of the most watched in primetime during its third and fourth seasons. Big time. And, you know, just like the Fonz and Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley have been embraced by a lot of people in Milwaukee, none more so than Lakefront Brewery. Lakefront's founder and owner, Russ Klisch, is with us. Lakefront Brewery, if you don't know, one of the OGs of craft brewing, founded in 1987. They're located in the River West neighborhood in Milwaukee, famous for the brewery tour. And that's where, Russ, first of all, thanks for being here. Always good to talk to you. That's where Laverne and Shirley's legacy really lives on at Lakefront in the tour, correct?
Yes, we always sing the song right at the end, and it always brings a lot of smiles to people's faces. One of the few times you ever can sing on a brewery tour.
That's true. I've been on a number of them, and yours is the only one to sing on.
Well, I'm over on Instagram right now, and it looks like yesterday during the 50th anniversary, the tour group had a little bit of fun. There's some singing, there's some dancing, and it looks like a really good time. But when it comes to Laverne and Shirley and this 50th anniversary, we have to ask, how did the show make breweries like Lakefront, how did it put you guys on the map? How does it still put you guys on the map?
Well, I think around 2005, we decided, why don't we start singing the Laverne Shirley song at the end of the tour?
Good marketing.
And everybody loves it. It's still to this day. Hard to remember this, but 50 years ago, you didn't find that many ladies in the manufacturing workplace. And when That's they sang true. That song that said, you know, doing it my way, that still resonates, especially with a lot of the older ladies that come here. Because at the end of in the middle of the song, they say, do it in our way. We always tell everybody, let's raise your fist when you say that. And you see all these ladies in their, 50s, 60s, 70s, and they really get into it. And it really meant something to those ladies.
You end the tour, like you said, at the bottling line. The iconic shot in the opening credits is them putting their gloves on the bottles. You guys do that. And just a little bit and follow Lakefront Brewery on Instagram. Lakefront Brewery is right there. You can follow them on all the socials. But it says, we at Lakefront owe a debt of gratitude to Penny Marshall, Cindy Williams, and the producers that chose to set the series in our good city. Laverne and Shirley worked as bottling line employees at Schatz Brewery around 2005. Like you just said, Russ, we expanded our bottling line by installing a conveyor belt from the shuttered Schlitz Brewing Company, and that's where the glove goes. So you guys are fully embracing it. And your tour, for those who were hearing this and said, I've kind of heard of Lakefront's tour, What sets the Lakefront Brewery Tour apart from any other brewery tour in the country?
One thing we do differently here is we hire a lot of comics or theater people to do it. We don't write a script. And so every time a tour guide goes out, it's kind of their own little act. So you can come here and see the tour and get a different perspective from a different other people. So it's fun in that respect. We don't have, you know, videos that we show. We give beer first along the way. That usually keeps people jolly.
That's the important part. Tour. Yeah, that's the important part.
And so we let them sample, and that makes everybody happy and, you know, laugh at all the bad jokes. And, and so we do that. And plus, we educate them on how beer's made. Yeah. So that's all fun.
Yeah. Now, I do want to ask, because as we talk about what you guys do and embrace Milwaukee and Laverne and Shirley, I think we would be really remiss if we didn't talk about the upcoming Valentine's Day celebrations. Yes. And a little bit more fun that happens at Lakefront. So you guys offer a really unique experience, Russ. And we're talking with Russ Klisch. He is the owner of Lakefront Brewery in Milwaukee. Tell us about these really unique Valentine's Day celebrations that only are offered at Lakefront Brewery.
A while back, we didn't have anybody coming to our brewery on Valentine's Day. I couldn't imagine some guy trying to tell his significant other to come down here. So we decided to do weddings, and cheap, inexpensive weddings. You know how expensive weddings are right now.
So
you get married for $25. You can come down here. We got ordained from the internet, we got our license, and we give a tour, a wedding like every half hour, and we have like 20 of them throughout the day. And so it's nice. All of a sudden you announce like Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so is coming in. Everybody stands up and claps, and a lot of them bring like 10, 15 people with them.
Oh, that's
awesome.
And I also do a mass vow renewal at noon and 6 o'clock. For anybody who wants to come in, that's free. You get a free beer for both of you if you come and do that. So if you can't do that for free beer, I'm not sure what that all means.
Yeah, really?
Come on down.
Do I need a reservation? Because I'm thinking, listen, I've been married a long time, but you could always use a spruce up. Do I need reservations for that renewal, or do I just show up with my betrothal?
For a renewal, you don't need a reservation. Okay. You can just show up. Okay. You do need a reservation and a license if you want to get married, though.
All right. Well, we eloped, so we definitely need a brush up.
Oh, yeah. We should do a group outing and all go down and get our vows renewed. If you want to get married at Lakefront Brewery, go to lakefrontbrewery.com, get all the information. It's right on there. And then take the tour, celebrate Laverne and Shirley, enjoy some of the best craft beer in, I'm going to say, the country. Russ, I'm going out on a limb. It's definitely in Milwaukee, but I'm a big fan. Try some curds, the curds of the month. Lakefront is the OG. Russ, always a pleasure to talk to you. Have a great, have a great Valentine's Day. You're going to be hoarse by doing all these weddings and things. But
preserve
we're
the
looking
voice.
Forward to it.
Preserve the voice. Thank you so much for
being
here.
We'll see you soon, Russ.
Thanks.
Take care.
That was great. I feel like having a beer. I feel like shamealing and shamaling all the way down a sidewalk.
And I have no plans for Valentine's Day. So
there you go.
I think that
might be fun. The missus now has plans.
That's right. The last time we had our vows renewed was by Elvis in Vegas. So why not go to a brewery to keep our
Thank you for listening today. It's Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.